order?
Must be a first.
Do you know the third
sure.
Honey,
though? There he is.
No, it's a... for termination. You ready for us?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think almost everybody is here and accounted for. We do have a quorum.
Figure it out as we go, I guess.
We are going to be... moving the education bill, and which will be a committee bill, and then be open to discussion and amendments. And hopefully we will be able to take action in a timely way. We're getting a little late getting started, but there's been overlapping committees, and it's been a little bit of a challenge to herd everybody into place. So, but thank you very much for being here. Senator Nelson, were you going to?
Yes. Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate Council 8210, please.
Thank you. This is the draft that we are working on that will be, when we act on it, will be introduced on the floor probably by tomorrow, and, which I will be authoring. So if there are, is there any questions or discussion before we get started? Senator Stevens.
Sure, I just wanted to, if you could explain why it's SC 8210 instead of a Senate file number?
It's not a bill introduction. When you, committee bills are ones that you put together in the committee, and then they are introduced after the fact. That is not, that's a, not an uncommon practice.
So then what is the,
So, Madam Chair, then what's the effect of that? Of, I mean, I understand. Is there any change in how our committee proceedings will go today if it's a SC instead of a regular Senate file?
No.
Okay.
And I believe amendments have been drafted to that, so that's the course of business. If there's any corrections from the council or?
No corrections, Madam Chair. Sorry.
Thank you. Well, we've, you know, there's been, I think we've gone over, we've heard testimony and gone over the provisions of the bill, and I think you're quite aware of some of the objectives that we've had in attempting to both strengthen the importance of teachers and having quality teachers in the classroom. The challenges of improving student learning and closing the achievement gap, and working on all of these kinds of things, both policy-wise and fiscal-wise, within an environment of limited, you know, no additional resources. I think that is hard for us because it's a lot easier to make change if you can grandfather somebody in and just and move on with additional resources. But it's also, I think, a part of the times is that the challenge of looking at what we're getting with what we are now investing, which is not, there's no small piece of amount of money. And if we can do a better job and set up the climate and the conditions for, whether it's repurposing or using more effectively these dollar resources on behalf of students, and the good work of teachers, that I think is what we are hoping to at least set a direction with for in this bill. So there's an author's amendment that amendment, the A-12 amendment is a, as you can see, is largely technical. It's both from the fiscal And the verbiage of making corrections throughout, with the exception of. Oh, you want to walk through it? Okay, because there is the exception is a change on page 2 that clarifies that there was a clarification that was needed in the proposal involving 9th and 10th graders taking college in the schools. But Dr. McQuay, why don't you point out any of the things that we should take particular note of?
Sure. Madam Chair and members, I'll just walk through line by line real quick. The line 1.2 of the amendment is just a reviser edit. Lines 3 through 7 is a general education fix. There was some levy impact that didn't get picked up here, and so actually there's no change in gen ed over the biennium, and it shifts about 500 million from one year to the 500,000 from one year to the next. So there's no change over the biennium, and this just corrects those numbers. The remainder of that page is just reviser edit. And then on page 2, the provision that was included from Senator DeCrispell to allow 9th and 10th graders to sit in on college in the schools class, that provision did not allow those 9th and 10th graders to get credit for that class. These sections, that section would be deleted then, and sections 19, 20, and 21 would be inserted to allow 9th and 10th graders to sit not only sit in on those college in the schools classes, but get credit if all 11th and 12th grade students have applied for the course and additional students are necessary to offer the course. And then I'll just note, too, on that there was a fiscal cost in the Senator DeCrypt bill. That part of the bill is taken out, so there is no fiscal cost to that. And then that continues through line 3.7, and then on 3.8 to 3.9, that is a reviser edit. And then on 3.10 and 11, this adds language to the Reading Core program to clarify that early literacy skills include comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction, so the cross-reference to 122A06 subdivision 4. Then lines 3.12 to 3.15 are just reviser edits. 3.16 and 3.17 allow the appropriations for the early literacy money, any money that does not, any balance in the first year doesn't cancel but is allowed is available in the second year. 3.18 to 3.24 is reviser edits, and then again on 3.25 and 26, that language is there for the appropriation that allows a balance in the first year to not cancel, but makes it available in the second year for the Purpich Center.
Madam Chair, quick question.
Senator Daley.
Ms. McQuay, can you clarify what you said about the fiscal note with respect to Senator DeCrypt's bill?
Madam Chair and Senator Daley, the Senator DeCrypt bill, as the committee saw it, had a fiscal note because it allowed non-public students to participate in post-secondary enrollment options. What these sections do is just allow 9th and 10th graders to participate in college in the schools courses if they're needed to fill up the course. That's a capped appropriation for college in the schools at $2 million. And so it would change the proration that the department pays out for each student, but it wouldn't change the overall fiscal cost.
Any other questions? Do you care to offer the...
Yes.
I don't know if I can offer the author. I guess I can offer the author.
Okay.
So all in favor, signify by saying aye to the A-12 amendment.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. The motion is the amendment is adopted. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And today's kind of the opportunity for us to make suggested changes, and I hope we can do that. I think just a few comments first. The I guess overall, there's some very positive things that I see in the bill. But then there's some areas that are, I feel, are we're relatively short, and wish we would have had more time. I wish we'd have had more opportunity to examine the landscape. And one of the things that I asked Senate Council and Research to do was to put together a kind of a what I would consider a traditional spreadsheet. Take a look at the bill and try to compare it to how we would have looked at it in the past. And generally, we always work off of that February forecast and try to gauge what impacts the legislation that we have before us would do to our to our schools. And this might be an opportunity. I don't know if you have. If we have copies of that, I hope we do. It's they're handed out.
Runs?
Or these are runs. It's a spreadsheet that shows. There's really two parts to it, and then this will lead to an amendment. So, but I think it's helpful to know ahead of time that one of the. I don't know if they're.
Are we going to get copies? I'm not aware. I don't have a second one. Is there?
Madam Chair.
Senator Bono.
I believe they're getting them to hand out.
No. Thank you. Thank you.
When I say two parts, basically, the first part is. I'll wait until they get handed out. Yeah, it's just more information for members to look at it and see. What we have on the first part is basically on the left side the list of the school districts. almost every run has, and then as you go across the top, you'll see that there's the revenues for the different. Funding streams, basic, compensatory, all the other general ed revenues, the special education, the integration, and then the career and technical. And that the left side is 2012, the right side is 2013. And then if you flip kind of to the middle, which I don't think this has numbers, but page 15. You'll notice that in the middle and over on the right, there's a difference column. And what this is looking at is we have a breakdown in communication.
Oh, page 15 is on is the first page.
Yes.
Sorry.
So. You'll see in the center there's a column difference of Senate file 2012 over the February 2012 forecast. And the same was over on the right, which is FY13 and FY are over the forecast. So what this does is compares those streams of revenues that are in the bill with the difference against the February forecast. And so you'll see the numbers that are in red are really reductions to school districts on a per pupil basis. And I would point out that it's quite a spread for some districts. Some districts of mine go up. Thief River Falls doesn't lose, but if you take a look at other districts, 513, which is Brewster, I'm not sure where Brewster, I should say where Brewster is, but it's a rural district, they significantly lose revenues, $356 the first year and $171 the second year. If you look at Minneapolis, obviously, with the integration revenues that are taken out, The first year they lose $33. The second year they lose over $500. And I think we had some discussion of that yesterday in committee. But this is information that you can look at, and it gives you a sense of what's going on in the legislation. And the amendment, Madam Chair, I call this amendment my Hail Mary pass. But it's an amendment to inject revenues into our schools. And what it does is it takes the current 2773 formula, the shift that we have, and goes back to a 90-10, so that we end up putting a significant amount of money back into our districts to try to address a lot of need out there. We heard need from school districts having to borrow money, to charter schools that had struggling because of the way the shift affects them, to a whole host of other districts, problems around the state in one fashion or another. And so, Madam Chair, I would like to offer the A1 amendment, which is a significant amount of money that would go back out into the school districts, and would hope that we could vote positively on this.
So, thank you, Senator Stump. Well, the amendment is being passed out. I think you've explained it well. Where is your intent to get that $1.4 billion?
Madam Chair, you are correct, and I happen to remember being in the same position that you were in, or you are in, and I know that this bill has a couple more stops, one stop is in finance, and the next stop is in taxes.
Senator Stump, it's the other way around this year.
Oh, it's reversed. Well, then that'll work out even better. Taxes is a very good stop for it. And I would be the first to say that I'd be happy to go and talk to the chair of the tax committee and try to encourage her to put up some sources of revenue. So.
Is there any discussion? Senator Stump's amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to request a roll call pursuant to the rules for journal entry.
Any further discussion? Everybody understand the amendment and what it does? No further discussion. The Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
Chair votes no.
Senator Bonoff?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Han? Senator Harrington?
No.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Nino?
No.
Senator Scheid?
Yes.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Stump?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
Yes.
Senator Weaker?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
No.
I think somebody missed. You missed Miss Senator Harrington?
Oh.
Is Senator Han here?
Senator Han's not, but I would actually like to change my vote.
Senator Harrington?
That's a yes.
There being 7 in favor and 9 opposed, the amendment does not prevail. Well, I guess I don't need to hammer that one.
Madam,
beat up on it anymore.
Madam Chair.
Better stop.
Madam Chair, I have one other kind of substantial amendment that I'd like to roll out. This is the A26 amendment.
A26 amendment, who's... Okay, get rid of a lot of paper here.
And, Madam Chair, I could start explaining it.
Yes, Senator Stump.
It probably doesn't need a lot of explanation because we did get a, I thought, a very good explanation here a week or two ago. What this amendment is a, this is a delete all amendment, and no ill will toward the chair, but the delete all amendment is actually the governor's proposal that we had heard here in the committee some time ago. And the essence of that is that it would basically have the pieces that probably would be important to remember is that there are provisions in there for all day K, entirely 100% paid all day K, but the way the governor has put it, it makes up the difference, and it's directed more toward the those higher risk kindergarten age students. They have a program in there trying to identify the outstanding schools and to pass that on and use it as an example. They have a plan in here to pay back the shift on a 10% per year basis starting in 2013. So this doesn't take the whole shift approach to giving that money back to our school districts. And members, I might remind you that it's not just the $1.4 billion that we have taken or borrowed from the school districts. It was also another shift that is kind of permanently in law. That's the property tax recognition shift. And so between the two of them, we have taken about, I believe it's about $2.4 billion. Not quite, maybe 2.2. I see our fiscal person squinting.
Mr. Chair, members, the property tax recognition shift will grow over time as property taxes grow. At present, it's about $514 million.
Madam Chair, there's no, I mean, it's pretty easy for us to understand that our school districts are in financial trouble. And I realize that our committee has had a target that is less of a restrictive target than other committees, but I do think that we have to stand up and say we do need to consider how we're going to restabilize the financial health of our districts across the state. And I believe that this would be a good starting point. So.
Is there any questions or discussion? Mm-hmm. I would note that this does not put any money on the formula itself. It goes out to all districts, but it keeps the current formula in place.
Right. Madam Chair, request a roll call.
If there's no further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
No.
Senator Bonoff?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Han? Senator Harrington?
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Madam Chair, was there a fiscal note on this? I didn't hear any fiscal. costs on this?
Senator Nelson, it's the governor's bill.
So,
other than it's it hit, it's I don't know if we had did we have a fiscal note on it? But we're in the middle of a roll call. I think it's inappropriate to be
raising without a fiscal note. No.
Senator Nino?
No.
Senator Scheid?
Did you say Scheid? Yes.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
With seven, Senator Hanna's arrived. Would you like to vote on the governor's bill? Just completed a roll call.
Making the all amendment to the governor's substituting the governor's bill.
Oh, General. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I had to step out of the room. But if we're offering an amendment to add the governor's language instead of yours,
yes,
I would vote no.
There being seven ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Sum. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a few comments about the spreadsheet that Senator Stump passed out. I was confused when I looked at the runs yesterday because it looked like all of my districts were doing better than had than they would have been before. So it looked like there were mostly winners and very few losers. And that kind of made sense to me in terms of the approach. Well, we're just moving basically the same amount of integration aid and turning it into this literacy thing. But then as I thought through, but the compensatory was being delinked, it just didn't make sense that my districts could all be doing so much better. And so I did some talking and talking to Senator Stumpf and fiscal analyst and learned that there really was a different way to look at it if you compared it to the February forecast. And so when I looked at it, what I found was that my districts that had less of the free and reduced lunch, which was Minnetonka and Wayzata, they a little bit were winners. But the districts that I represent that have more free and reduced lunch, which is Robbinsdale and Hopkins, that in fact they did worse, that they actually went down compared to forecast. Let's see. I'm looking at Hopkins right now, for example, goes down $114 per pupil, and Robbinsdale went down $160 per pupil. So that is of concern to me because I think that even if they did all that they could with regard to the literacy and got 100%, they would still have a per pupil hit worse than those districts who have less challenges. And so that's a concern because I know, having been in those schools and met with those teachers and actually volunteered in some of the classrooms, that they do face greater challenges trying to deal with the mobility that they have, deal with the English language learners that they have, the poverty that they have. And so I am concerned that this particular approach and formula leaves the schools with more trouble, less able to deal with that. And I don't have an answer because I don't understand enough about how the pieces came together, but it's just an overall concern in that regard with this particular approach. And then, Madam Chair, I do have an amendment that I could, but my amendment has nothing to do with this, so that I wanted to end that. This is just an aside.
Mr. Nelman, could you clarify on that spreadsheet that shows that this spends the total line, uh-huh, the $30 million figure over to the right difference between this this spreadsheet and our bill?
Madam Chair and members, what this data run shows is a reference point to the fiscal year 2012 and 2013 forecast, and makes an average subtraction of the total components. In fiscal year 12, it shows a savings on an average basis of $6 per pupil, and then $30 per pupil on a in fiscal year 13. I think if I'm what's behind your question is why is that not zero? And I think what you're probably getting at is some of the vagaries of how the dollars are actually distributed in with respect to ADMs versus enrollments. You'll recall that the literacy aid went out on an enrollment basis, and then we divided the numbers by adjusted ADMs. So there might be some vagaries of those calculations. But I frankly hadn't looked at that number, and I'd like the opportunity to go back and make sure that I have an adequate answer for you.
Let me ask a question because I don't know.
That $30 million says that this comparison spends $30 million more than our bill, so it isn't quite a direct comparison. I would just like to point out here, it is tough to change formulas with flat funding, but one of the things that was in my purpose was, number one, you could come in there and say, let's take all that compensatory and just spread it on the formula. That does have a definite negative impact. We have not changed that.
Yeah.
It was capturing just the growth, which was used to be able to add a percent onto the formula. Now, the next legislature can come back with money and put the growth in place, or can make those kinds of decisions. But the other thing that we were trying to do here is also the fact that we've been investing money based on those needs, but we really haven't done, I think, a full job of saying what's the return. Are we getting back what we are investing in? And that is one of the reasons why I particularly wanted to see if we can't divert, in the case of the integration aid, take that money. There's a lot of diversity in a lot of districts. Some of them we're not getting any integration aid at all. And there's no law in not going forward with, because the integration programs are getting the money that every student gets. Just because they're being integrated doesn't necessarily mean that they will cost more. That is it's the approach to teaching that we've got to stop. And if you haven't heard me before, of using some of these situations as an excuse or even an inference that these kids can't learn, because we know they can. And there's a great deal of evidence out there that they can. And so part of what we're doing, even though it afflicts a bit of pain, tried to minimize that, and I think we did a better job than that. I haven't had a chance to look at the other body's bill, but I don't think they were as cautious in that direction as I've tried to be here, is that trying to incent the efforts in the direction that will actually make that difference in cutting, closing the achievement gap and improving reading proficiency, which ultimately we've got some more work to do in the special ed, the RTI model that is really has a lot of promise for keeping kids out of the learning disability group of special ed. Special ed is growing. It's largely growing in the learning disability and emotional behavior, and often those two are linked. If you're not learning, you're humiliated or frustrated, and therefore that's played out. And if it's in extremes, that's feeding that. And special ed costs more. And if the kids get into it, I mean, the last evidence that I'd seen was that they said at the federal level, 5% of kids get out of it. So in other words, they're not getting the instruction to be able to move out of it. So the investing in trying to, and in investing our current resources in focusing them on getting that reading, that literacy challenge, is what we are trying to do. And we're trying to do it within existing resources rather than being able to add additional. And I do believe that there's a lot of resources coming. Minneapolis is going to have a major, major influx of resources from Target working on the literacy area. The things that I was excited about meeting with Senator Harrington and the folks from St. Paul and the consultant that they're working with in this 90-90-90 program. I haven't had a chance to go in on the website yet, but that was very impressive. I don't know if you'd had a chance to have that exposure beforehand. That 90% poverty, 90% minority, 90% success. It can be done, and it's the key. Sometimes we have just been putting money out there without a clear understanding of how to have that money make a difference. And the key that we're learning is that it's in the implementation. And that's why the factors of having solid leadership with intentional process and plans for putting into place to make that happen is what's key. And that is the reason that we've tried to make it, you know, somewhat gingerly. The integration didn't cut it off slash a year, leaving it exactly the way it is. But with the caveat that the following year it will change and there will be measurement relative to the achievement of both progress toward the growth model as well as reaching the proficiency as a means of distributing those monies. And I think some of these schools, these districts that may have lost because of the integration part of it could see some real gains. And that's kind of the philosophy of the attempt that we made in terms of channeling these resources. Now, it's not over, but I hope we can continue to have a healthy discussion because I think we do need to. We do need to review, and we do need to be able to get beyond just the ways in which we have now disseminated the revenue. I'm the first to admit there are challenges, but how our focus here is on how to get those resources delivering the education that is needed and hopefully capturing. We're also working on how do you capture some of the resources from other venues and other places to help deal with some of the outside forces on that affect our children as well.
Well, but that, follow-up question then,
absolutely.
Madam Chair.
So,
and I appreciate the shift in focus from giving dollars out to being held to account for particularly literacy. But I'm wondering, as I look at these runs, trying to understand them, what was the hypothesis in terms of percent of students that would make progress? Like, when I look at these numbers, there must have been an estimate, a decision, a forecast that said, well, this many percent are going to end up qualifying for that dollars?
I think Dr. McQuay can describe it. It was kind of we even softened that with rolling averages. And would you explain what model was used for that distribution?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, there was a three-year average involved in those calculations, but similar to how the governor forecasted his when he did the growth is that you do have to estimate what will be the growth in future years, and because that's that can't be estimated at this point, there is a fudge factor included in the calculation as well as an increase in enrollment, an adjustment for increases in enrollment projected.
And Senator Bonoff, I believe that you know, that's clearly an estimate. Who knows how many and what changes can be made, but there's an incentive to do it, and they will get the aid.
And Madam Chair and Ms. McQuay or Dr. McQuay, could you just give us a, for example, was it was there a range in terms of, you know, like when I look at Hopkins, what percent of those students did you think in your formula? And again, it doesn't have to be exact. But I don't know how many students in Hopkins are proficient.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, that information is on the MTE public website, and it shows the proficiency of
of kids as well as the growth of kids for the past 3 years.
Okay, so Madam Chair, thank you. So what we did is we looked at what historically they've been doing, and that was used. So when you talk about they could get more money, it's because if they accomplished more, this would go up. So this is a variable. I got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for asking the question to get that clarification. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, part of my comments yesterday about issues tied to poverty are pretty much reflected here. And I'm thank you, Senator Stump, for bringing this, because I thought that I really went crazy yesterday and didn't want to fight with my chair. And, you know, Madam Chair, I will not do that because I really believe in your principles. I really believe that you want to do the right thing. I have absolutely no doubt. For 4 years, I worked with you in this committee, and I know that you really want to do what is best for children. I will never put that in doubt. I think what is problematic for me is that we have a tendency here to look at, you know, this deficiency model through which, you know, if you have, I'm going to look into this formula, if you're getting too much, then I'm going to make sure that you know, I get enough, and then we go back and forth. And the reality is that we have very little for everyone. That is the bottom line. We don't have enough to provide the quality education that all of us in this table really want to provide in our districts. So that leaves us with very little money to work, and we're trying to figure out how to do that best, how to use that money efficiently. In this proposal that we have in front of us, what is happening is that, and Senator Bonoff just realized that in her districts, those districts that have growing poverty will receive less. That's what we just did for all of you. It just so happened that I have a high concentration of poverty, and I have one district. My neighbor was just pointing to me that we have, Senator DeCurry has 16, so there's a lot of districts that he has to really look into, you know, how this formula actually works out for him. And it's easy for me to say, you know, one district and this is not working. But if you look at these tables, what you're going to realize is that where you have high concentration of poverty, you're going to get less money now. And that's just not good. That's not good for you. And I want to work with you on figuring out how do we fund these reading initiative that you're proposing. Absolutely, I want it for my district. I do want it, and I look forward to put together a plan to fully fund it. I believe that we need to target at the beginning to see the growth and compare. And I think that we need to target those schools and those districts where we have high incidence of poverty, actually. And so, Senator, what I'm saying is that I am not disagreeing with you on principle. Absolutely, I will not. In fact, I believe that the way to go at this is to look at how do we reform policy, and then we put the dollars behind it. That's how you put policy in place. You need to figure out what works, what doesn't work, and how we fund it. What is the budget that you need to get to that place? But I do not believe that you do this by saying, here's the money, then you go figure it out. That's not the way it works. And I sincerely hope that we engage in the discussion about what is that we really want to accomplish in every district where we have ELL students, low-income students, whatever students we have. Where do we want to go, and what would it take to fund that? That is, in my view, the correct way to go at looking at how do we fund education policy.
Well, and Senator Torres-Rey, I appreciate that, and I want to work with you because I want to see how our current money that's going for this category is being used, and to what degree how it's being used is effective in making that change. Because if it's not, then adding more money to that is not going to make the difference.
That's right.
We do need to get at those elements, and I think we need to keep that before us. There are places that have been effective. Sometimes it's hard to get right and drill down and find, because as one of the experts that's been working in this area. You, say, you can walk into a two schools can be seem exactly alike. They have the same level of staffing and curriculum and all, levels of poverty, and one can be working and one isn't. What's the difference? And I think they're boiling that down to the importance of leadership. It is the importance of the professional development, and the curriculum is important, but it's how it's the intentionality, the intention of implementation, and it takes, it's a process as well as strategies that are not just strategies, but what in fact is done so that we can, because obviously we're not getting, disparity of I lost the word that we're at the bottom of the heap on the gap, the lack of proficiency, the stability of that line of never increasing it. If that stays that way, we're not getting what we need to, even with the money, the additional money, in a substantial amount that's being put into these districts. So some of the people representing districts that are of have challenging circumstances, maybe not of the same nature, wonder, you know, what's going on here. We've got to be able to get past that. And so I want to work with that. And I hopefully we will be able to continue to work. We're doing this early in our terms of our budget process because we've got a ways ahead. But we also have some time to continue working on some policy areas and getting more information. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think I'm blessed with probably the best committee in the Senate. So if we can't do it, I don't know if anybody can. Mm-hmm. So, okay, is there another question? Senator DeCrae.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, first of all, I want to start off by thanking you because I have learned a lot already in this committee, and I am very committed to education and representing my district, Senate District 25, which does include 13 school districts, and they are too diverse. Three of them are charter schools. None of them are real large. My largest school district is Northfield. But we have school districts that are consolidated, and we have other school districts that are looking to consolidate. I have winners and losers in this as well. But what I think that this formula here exposed is the fact that over the years, this formula was picking winners and losers based on things that weren't directly related to ability to learn. And I think this formula exposed that. And I think it's trying to right the ship in part. Now, I absolutely would.
Could you clarify this formula?
No.
Exposed it?
No. This,
okay.
This
right.
One. The one that we got.
Thank you.
Yesterday. And I understand entirely where my neighbor, Senator Torres Rey, is coming from, because I would be fighting for my school district if I was her as well. But that's why I'm hearing. I'm fighting for my school district because my school district is getting a dollar to a dollar and a half that's going to other school districts. And that's too big of a disparity. It's not fair. When we have kids in my school district that aren't able to get all the classes that they need to go on to college, so many of my schools are offering one foreign language. And you know, they're having to cut curriculum to make ends meet. And so thank you for bringing forward a number of schools that have been in poverty and that have showed that these kids can learn and they can really excel. And I really appreciate the fact to see that there are some wonderful examples out here that of how we can, you know, succeed. So what I'm suggesting is continue to bring these programs forward that are succeeding, and let's try to learn from them. I think there's other programs out there that we'll be looking at in the future to come up with new ways to innovate. I don't think all of us in this room have all of the ideas. I think that there's an awful lot of other great ideas that will come out as we go along. But righting the ship we had to do, and I appreciate you at least changing the direction to bring it back where it needs to be.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator DeGrave. Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair, I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but I'd like to offer the AE5 amendment.
Okay.
I'll just try to parlay as it's being handed out.
Okay. Senator Sieben offers the AE5 amendment. It's being distributed.
As it's being handed out.
Can you adjust your mic a little bit? Sure. I can tell if you're not speaking into it because my monitor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think
that this kind of does parlay into the discussion that the committee just had, because while I do appreciate your efforts around compensatory and integration aid, or the discussion at least on those, one area that I see as a real problem with the bill that's before us is the capping of the special ed funding, of the growth factor of special education. So what my amendment does is simply remove that, the cap of the growth factor in the legislation. And I think it'd be appropriate to pass out, there's a table that was prepared, I believe, or runs that have to do with, that show the amount of cross subsidy that districts receive or engage in right now, and would how that would be affected under the bill that's before us, if that could also be distributed. Members, as we talk about the impact of special education funding or in any reform that we're trying to do, whether it's literacy projects or otherwise, I think that we need to be real cognizant of the, as the cross subsidy for special education increases, it puts an increasing pressure on regular classroom programs or regular programs that are happening, that are good things that are happening in our schools. I've been told that the current special ed cross subsidy is $550 million, and what I hope this table will help illustrate to members is if we cap the growth, that cross subsidy is going to continue to build. For instance, in a district that I represent, South St. Paul, the adjusted net cross subsidy under the current bill will be over $1,000 per pupil unit, where costs that are currently going, costs, if the bill would pass the way it is, the cross subsidy would increase that much. So $1,000 from each per pupil unit would be going to fund special education.
So
I'm happy to stand for any questions, but hope that I would have the committee support and would ask for a roll call.
Thank you, Senator Sieben. It's interesting, when the growth factor was put in, we had money to pay for it. The reality of the change now is that if you stop the growth, we still have to deliver the service. Yes, it may have an impact on the cross subsidy, but we've got that anyway. There's no additional resources to cover those additional costs. That is a piece of distributing to every district. Every district has a cross subsidy. We do have challenges with that, but until there's some additional resources, and I think we're attempting to, and I think others are too, of communicating federally, not only with the president's as well as with Congressman Klein's office, as they work on the education funding, that if they did nothing in education but increase the amount that they send us for special ed, if they brought that up to the 40% and forgot about everything else and kept their hands off from the policy setting that and the state responsibility in education, wow, we would have a great help. So we're mixing money around, but it is not going to change the service to special ed, and the cross subsidy is going to remain. So it's a challenge to deal with, but.
And thank you, Madam Chair. My response to that would be that my understanding, though, is that the way that you're able to, under your bill, the way that the $50 per pupil increase is able to be obtained is partially by capping that special ed growth factor.
Yes.
So
I said.
And a further point, I guess, is that districts that have maybe increased needs or have higher rates, obviously, of special education are again going to be disproportionately hit, in addition to losing where they're also losing their compensatory aid. But I just think that it's important for the public to also understand that, in my opinion, and looking at the way some of our local property or our local levies have been passed, operating levies have been passed, if we don't do something at the state really to try to get at this too, and I recognize it will take increased money, there's just going to be further pressure on local property taxes because the programs that parents want, they want obviously want special ed funded, but they also want there to be band and literacy programs and everything else that is now on the table for getting cut because of budget shortfalls are under that much increased pressure, and therefore it's more likely that property taxes will increase if, as a state, we can't come up with the money to actually take care of this. And capping the growth, I just, you know, guess I just see it as we're making that problem even worse.
Well, Senator Sieben, if the property taxes will go up if people can pass the referendum, that's the way they would have to do it because it is not an automatic. Senator Hanner, have you got your hand up?
Yes, Madam Chair. I just had a question before we acted on the amendment.
Mm-hmm.
The chart or the table, Appendix B, I guess it's labeled, that Senator Sieben has had distributed, it notes at the top that this chart excludes federal revenue and expenditures. And I'm just wanting to know, Senator Sieben, why are we doing that, and what is the effect of that exclusion from your numbers?
Madam Chair and Senator Hanna,
Senator Sieben.
I believe, and perhaps someone from the department could answer this or could help since it came from them, but I believe it's just to try to show what the state subsidy is right now so that we can more clearly see what the state impact of the capping the growth would be.
And, Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, I just want to understand. It seems to me that if a school district has X money and we're going to try to determine the effect of a particular policy on the money they have, to exclude a portion of that money seem to perhaps have an effect on what the analysis is showing. And unless there's if that's what the money they have, why wouldn't we look at all the money and see what the effect on it is rather than just choose parts of the money? That's I'm just not clear on what that is doing.
Is there any further discussion? If not, the Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
No.
Senator Bonhoeff?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Hahn?
No.
Senator Harrington?
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Nino?
No.
Senator Scheid?
Yes.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
No. There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Madam Chair, may I offer the A27?
I hope this doesn't take too long, but we have to recess at 4:30. We've gotten orders from our caucus, and so we will be taking a recess and then coming back probably about 6.
Okay.
Madam Chair, there's another committee.
Senator Stumpf.
We have jobs
meeting at
too,
6,
we?
I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm on one that's meeting too. So, but we'll see if there's any change in terms of who has to complete first here, and okay. We may learn that by the time we come back. Okay. Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair, the A27 addresses the Permanent School Trust Fund, something that's been a part of our statehood, land that was given by the United States government, Congress, when we became a state, and we have addressed the intent over the past few years so that we can maximize return to the classroom. And in legislation a few years ago that we passed in a bipartisan basis. And the A27, which I want to acknowledge Senator Thompson as being the author of, and I'm a co-author, this has a significant opportunity, and we could hear testimony if you need, or I would suggest we get this in play in a conference committee, the potential for $2 billion in the classroom, something that's needed. It's based on a Utah model. It's been studied quite a bit. The Minnesota School Boards Association has put a great deal of work in this, and I urge your support.
Senator,
request a roll call.
Yeah, Senator Wigger, this is a bill that, as you indicated, has been introduced, and I don't know if it's in our jurisdiction or if it's in environment. It's one that has to go to environment. If it were to go on, it would require that our education bill go to environment committee. This is may well be what we need to do, but we don't need to do it now. And so we will be working on the permanent school trust fund issues and the policy issues as we go forward, as the budget process continues. And so I would prefer if you would hold back on it, but if you want a roll call vote now, we'll go through the exercise, but I would encourage you not to support it now. It is an issue that definitely probably will not be controversial at all. But I would appreciate if we wouldn't attempt to put it in this bill.
Madam Chair, I respect what you're saying, but this is one way of sending a strong signal, and I would yield to Senator Bonhoeff.
Thank you.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Senator Wigger, Madam Chair, so are you saying that you would like this to be in the bill this year, but just not at this point?
Madam Chair, or Senator Bonhoeff, I suspect that we may be taking on there are several issues surrounding, and I don't know if you've got all of them in here, that relative to the school trust fund and its advisory council and all. We need to spend some more time on that. The trust fund advisory committee is meeting in a couple of weeks for more work on it. Truly, the direction we're going is going to put more into the trust fund, especially from some of the minerals that are there. Nobody's ready to put a shovel into the ground for extracting those minerals yet. What the efforts that's going on now is getting some of our school trust fund lands into areas where they're producing revenue, and there's working out both sale and exchange with the federal government for lands that is in the boundary waters that we can't touch or that's in old growth forests, these kinds of things. And we're getting better lands in terms of productivity, both for forestry and minerals. And the minerals is really where the potential is for getting money into that permanent school trust fund.
Madam Chair, I'm the past chair of that group. And
yes, I know.
I agree, and
well,
I think
just,
we need to send
this
a strong
for the
signal.
Information, not of you,
yes,
but for our other members that have not been as involved in it. And hopefully there will be an opportunity to become even more acquainted of the significance of both what that is, what we have done in the last few years to improve it, and Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the members will be interested to find out I agree with myself. I think it's a good bill. And so I certainly want to see the bill move forward, but I would defer to the chair. It doesn't make sense to me, members, to require the omnibus education bill to go over to the environmental committee because of one provision. I appreciate Senator Wieger's support on the bill, and I assume that we'll work together moving forward. But I would ask the members to, not throw any procedural hurdle in the way of this bill, and therefore I respectfully request a no vote on the amendment.
Madam Chair, there's several hurdles. There may be another bite at the apple on this entire bill, and I would reiterate the request for a roll call.
Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
No.
Senator Bonhoeff?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator DeCryf?
No.
Senator Hahn?
No.
Senator Harrington?
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Nino?
No.
Senator Scheid? Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf? Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wicker?
Yes.
Senator Wolf?
Senator Stumpf, did you wish to vote or pass?
Oh, I voted no.
You voted no. Okay. Senator Stumpf.
It's a wager. We'll see this later.
There being 4 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail. And we do need to recess, so I will call a recess at this time and prepared to come back at 6 o'clock.
Wait a second. I think so.